From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And we're about midway through the Illinois General Assembly's spring legislative session. There's usually a furious rush of activity at this time of year. Without getting too much into the schoolhouse rock of it, let's just say it's one of the major cutoff points for whether bills will continue on the path to becoming laws. So this is the perfect time for a halftime report on the Illinois General Assembly. And joining us now to talk about what's happened so far and what's yet to be done is Peter Hancock. He's State House reporter for Capital News. Peter, welcome back to the 21st Show.
It's good to be here.
Also with us, Jeremy Gorner, State House reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Jeremy, welcome back to you as well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Listeners, as ever, you're welcome to join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can send us an email, as ever, talk@21stshow.org. talk@21stshow.org. All right, Peter, I want to begin with sort of an overarching theme in state government we've been hearing about in recent months, recent years, I guess. Moody's Investors Service recently upgraded Illinois' bond rating or credit rating. This is the eighth upgrade the state has gotten in the last 2 years or so, less than 2 years, I guess. What does that say about where Illinois' financial situation is now compared with where we were several years ago?
Well, it means that the state is balancing its budgets and it's putting money away in a rainy day fund. We went through, I think, 8 or 10 credit downgrades during the previous administration when there was a 2-plus year long budget impasse. There was no money in the rainy day fund. Budgets were not balanced. Of course, having unbalanced budgets goes back before Bruce Rauner. But it basically means that the state government is doing its basic job, which is to pass a balanced budget and manage its finances. And so we've seen that in the form of credit upgrades, which is good news because that translates to lower interest rates when the state dips into the market for borrowing through bonds.
Arguably, as you know, the most important thing that a state government does is to pass a spending plan. What does this mean for the work that lawmakers are doing this year as they're looking at the budgeting process? And maybe we should add that a lot of the sort of the fiscal positives, if you will, for Illinois government have come in the form of federal assistance during the COVID pandemic. So what does this mean for the future?
Yeah, that certainly did help because there were also extraordinary expenses during the pandemic. What we've gotten now are a series of reports so far this fiscal year, and there'll be another one coming up later this week or early next week, revenue forecasts. And so far, those have been pretty rosy. They've been increasing their estimates of how much revenue the state is going to take in. Governor Pritzker tends to take those with a grain of salt. He says that he's still very conservative about his estimates. And of course, you know, the giant elephant in the room is whether or not there's going to be a recession later this year, which could certainly negatively impact revenue growth. So I think that's, you know, people are paying close attention to those revenue estimates. Right now, they're just kind of plodding through the budget process. There are lots of different appropriations committees that focus on different areas of state government, and they're hearing from the state agencies that are coming in, basically repeating Governor Pritzker's budget request, as well as other agencies that are maybe not normally part of the state budget that are requesting some help. So it's a process that takes right up until the final day of the session. It's typically the last bill that they pass or one of the last bills they pass before they go home.
Typically, or if you're lucky, it's not at midnight. But that's a month from now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's been a long time since I've had to do that. Jeremy Gorner, let me bring you into the conversation now, Jeremy of the Chicago Tribune. I mentioned this, we're in this sort of deadline period. That's for the state Senate. The House actually had its deadline last week. One of the, and so there was this furious rush to get legislation out of the House chamber last week. One of the issues we've talked about on our program is this rise in book challenges and book bans across the country. One of the pieces of legislation that, came out of the House last week would require libraries to have written policies against book bans or otherwise put their state grants at risk. Can you talk about that legislation and, what effect that could have on Illinois libraries?
Yes. So, you know, so basically, basically last week, you know, I believe it was a 69-39 party line vote. You know, the House approved the measure to deny grant funding to public and school libraries if they ban books or fail to devise policies against removing books from their stacks. Now, Illinois. Now, when you talk about book banning, I mean, just looking at statistics that some of these independent advocacy groups against book banning have compiled, Illinois. When you think of book banning, Illinois is not one of the states where this has actually been seen. If you compare it to other states that lean more Republican, like Florida.
Red states, right? Yeah.
Tennessee, Texas, et cetera. But at the same time, Secretary of State Alexi Giannoulias, his, you know, he talked about this on the campaign trail about, you know, about censorship, about fighting censorship and basically, kind of pushing him, thrusting himself into that national opposition of cadre of Democrats, basically, who have, you know, loudly opposed this kind of censorship. So as the state librarian, he basically is saying that any of these libraries will be ineligible for grant funding to improve their libraries. Now, this, as far as what kind of impact state public libraries would have by missing out on this funding, I think it remains to be seen, because we'd have to look at it, because different libraries have different demands, right? But just to kind of give you an idea of how much money the Secretary of State has spent over the years. So I think it was during fiscal year 2022. The Secretary of State awarded $62 million for just over 1,600 grants to Illinois libraries. There was $68 million in grants awarded, I guess, in 2021, and then $36 million in 2020. It's projected that by June 30th, the Secretary of State will have awarded more than 1,400 grants, totaling close to $36 million. And this could go for a wide range of improvements for libraries, public libraries, and school libraries across Illinois. So obviously what Giannoulias is trying to do is send a message that, you know, if you don't come up with policies, or if, you know, then there could be a problem in receiving funding. Now, of course, the opposition to that, we've seen this has also kind of gone hand in hand with a lot of school board races and library board races across Illinois and across the country, where book banning and censorship has become a big issue with respect to school curriculums, where anyone who's been accused of book banning says that, well, it's not about banning books. It's about banning books that are not age appropriate. That was a term that we saw one of the Republican lawmakers use on the House floor last week during the vote. And when I say age appropriate, there's been arguments that some of these books that that around the country that have been banned or have been restricted, proponents of banning those books say that, you know, there's pornographic material in there or other obscene or explicit material that's not appropriate for children. Whereas Democrats basically opponents of book bans have basically said what might be appropriate for your kid may not be appropriate for my kid. And oh, by the way, a lot of these books that are being censored, are books about LGBTQ issues and about the African American community. So, yes, so this is kind of the divisive tone that this issue has taken, not just in Illinois, but across the country.
Yeah, interesting. Culture wars coming to the Illinois General Assembly, which, you know, as you mentioned, Illinois is not exactly number one for this sort of issue out there, the way you're seeing it in certain red states. All right, let me just take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're sort of taking a survey over what lawmakers in the Illinois General Assembly have been up to. We are coming up on their spring break period. They're going to take a couple of weeks off in the midst of Passover and Easter and in the middle of Ramadan here, and then come back for a marathon 5 weeks of legislating as they are attempting to end their session in mid-May this year. We're talking about all this with Jeremy Gorner, who covers the State House for the Chicago Tribune, and Peter Hancock, who's State House reporter at Capital News Illinois, a news service that serves newspapers and radio stations up and down the state. Peter, let's talk about one of the other things that's been lawmakers have been pushing in recent weeks, and that is in the Senate. Democrats are working on a proposal to cap the price of insulin at $35. We have seen drug makers coming out and saying that they're capping these prices. In recent years, we have seen huge increases in prices for insulin. So what are Democrats thinking in going forward with this plan?
Well, they're kind of following on the footsteps of President Biden, and the Biden administration imposed that out-of-pocket cost in the Medicare program, which is the federally funded health care system for people over 65 or 67. They want to do that at the state level. In 2019, they passed a law that capped out-of-pocket expenses at $100 for, I think, maybe a 30 or 90 day supply. Now they want to lower it to $35. And what's interesting about this, this year actually marks the 100th anniversary of the discovery of insulin. And the researchers who found that sold the patent for $1. They said they didn't think, you know, this was going to save people's lives. They didn't think doctors should be getting rich off something that's that vital. And so it's really hard to understand. Of course, you know, there are different kinds of insulin now. They're constantly doing more development. But basically, insulin is still insulin. And, yeah, we've seen prices over the course of 20 years, you know, it's gone up several hundred percent. And there's not really much of an explanation of that. But they think, you know, this bill would basically apply to anybody that has insurance that is regulated by the state. These tend to be small group insurance policies, as well as state employee health insurance policy, the state Medicaid plan, everything except very large employers like, you know, Boeing or Burlington Northern or something like that. Large employers that have hundreds and hundreds of people on their plan. Those are regulated by the federal government. But this would be pretty much any insurance policy that's regulated by the state. And, you know, it would be a big help to a lot of people who depend on this. There was one person who spoke at this news conference who said, you know, she has to inject herself twice a day with this stuff, and she just can't go without it. So it's an important thing for a lot of people.
All right. Let me get through one more topic here before we need to take a break. I think we have about 2 minutes. And Jeremy, I want to ask you about another piece of legislation that has been getting a lot of attention, and that is this House legislation to allow multi-occupancy bathrooms to be gender neutral. Currently, it's actually so you can have a, what would you say, a one-seater, colloquially put it. People might encounter this in a small restaurant. Those, if in, I believe the law is in new buildings, they have to be gender neutral, so they can't have male or female designation. But now this would allow this to extend to multi-occupancy bathrooms with multiple stalls. What's behind this legislation?
Well, this amends the Equitable Restroom Act in 2019 when the legislature passed the bill on single occupancy public restrooms available to all genders. This one is for multi-occupancy restrooms. And actually, in the city of Chicago, there was an ordinance that was passed in 2021 allowing this. But yeah, so basically, this is one of the things that was really stressed by Katie Stewart, the main House sponsor behind this, is that this is completely optional. And this is another issue that has been thrust into culture wars about, especially, you know, with obviously a lot of concerns about bathrooms and how, you know, opponents of this feel that specific genders should only be allowed to use specific bathrooms, whereas groups like Equality Illinois have been, and many others have been steadfastly just, you know, behind this, obviously. But basically this applies to businesses, public universities, anywhere where there are already existing multi-occupancy restrooms specific to one gender. They can be changed to gender-neutral bathrooms with some, guidelines, obviously. Don't have the numbers in front of me. Of course, there would have to be sufficient number of stalls and urinals for male and female patrons and whatnot. One of the opponents to this bill, when it went through committee, mm-hmm. raised concerns about what this means for, like, you know, big outdoor spaces like public arenas, where there could be hesitance, you know, to use, you know, multi-occupancy restrooms, which again.
I'm sorry, we need to take a break. And that is such a complex issue. I think we're probably going to tackle that as its own segment on the show coming up in the weeks ahead. But let me just say, this is the 21st show. We're going to continue after a short break talking about state government, what the General Assembly has been up to. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about what the Illinois General Assembly has been up to. The lawmakers are coming up on the halfway point, sort of, in a manner of speaking, of their legislative session. They're about to go on spring break after this week, and then we'll come back for the furious final rush of the last 5 weeks of the legislative session. We thought this would be a good opportunity to check in on some of the individual pieces of legislation that lawmakers have been working on. We're talking about this with Jeremy Gorner, covers the State House for the Chicago Tribune, and Peter Hancock, who covers the State House for Capital News Illinois. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. Peter, I want to ask the partisan breakdown this year. Democrats increased their majorities in the General Assembly in the elections last year. Last week, we saw Republicans in the House walk off the floor, sort of in protest. They say Democrats are silencing them, not allowing them to voice their concerns. Can you talk about how the dynamic of the Democratic supermajorities is playing out in this legislative session?
Well, I think the Democrats are certainly focusing on their own agenda, which is often not in sync with the Republican agenda. And I've heard them say on a number of occasions that, the voters put them in charge for a reason. And so they don't have any particular incentive to spend a lot of time on the Republican agenda. I think the Republicans do have opportunities to raise their concerns as bills come up for debate. And there have been, I would say, a fair number of Republican bills. Now, they're not groundbreaking bills. A lot of them tend to be, you know, fixing a little thing back in their district or, kind of smaller type stuff. But they have paid attention. They have given Republican lawmakers a chance to put some of their legislation through. But like you said, it is a Democratic supermajority. And as long as that's the case, then they're going to focus on the Democratic agenda and not the Republican agenda.
This goes to one of my points that listeners have heard me say many times before. It's almost like at this point, when we talk about politics in the state, should we be talking about different factions within the Democratic coalition and whether they're getting along, since they do have such large majorities in the General Assembly? And Peter, what do you think about that? Have we seen Democrats largely working in concert this session?
Well, it kind of reminds you of Will Rogers, who said, "I don't belong to an organized political party. I'm a Democrat." There are a lot of factions within the Democratic caucus. But generally speaking, especially in a session like this, where a lot of the effort is focused on the budget. You have a governor who has been very successful so far, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, in balancing the budget and focusing on his priorities. But it's, you know, on the big items, it's not too hard to get the Democratic caucus in line on some of the bigger issues. Now, you have seen some issues where, well, what is it now? We've got 77 Democrats in the House, and sometimes a bill will only get 65 or 66 votes. So clearly there are some Democrats who are voting no or just not voting at all on things that they consider to be dangerous back home, or
yeah,
things that they're just not especially on board with.
But it's not even a tight enough majority where, you know, even a handful of Democrats can now spoil legislation for if the majority
yeah.
wants it. Okay. You know, there's one other topic I want to talk about before we are out of our time together. I was eating dinner out with my family last night in Springfield and briefly overheard people at the next table talking about a corruption trial taking place in Chicago. I would guess probably only in Springfield during the legislative session is this sort of dinner time conversation for people. But Jeremy Gorner, can you, I know you haven't been covering it directly, some of your colleagues mm-hmm. have, but can you bring us up to speed on what has been happening in the ComEd 4 trial, as it's some are calling it, up in Chicago?
Also, yes. So you have four defendants, one of them being longtime Mike Madigan confidant, Michael McClain, who are obviously they're accused of conspiring to bribe Madigan when he was the House Speaker to win his influence over ComEd legislation here in Springfield. The last 2 weeks, jurors have heard a series of secretly recorded telephone conversations by the feds that really outline how politics, you know, was played under Madigan's reign. I mean, there was a stream of, you know, what jurors kind of got a flavor for was a stream of jobs and benefits that followed from ComEd to people who were connected to Madigan, who supposedly did very little, if any, work at all in exchange for, favorable legislation for the electricity giant. And, Madigan and McClain themselves face separate racketeering charges, which obviously center around this alleged bribery plot. The defense, however, has maintained that, that prosecutors are mischaracterizing some of these actions that were captured on these recordings as bribery. And this really constituted legal political lobbying, and that there was no proof that Madigan did anything directly to help ComEd in exchange for benefits that helped out his pals in the 13th Ward on Chicago's southwest side or in Springfield. So that's kind of where we're at right now. I know that up yesterday, jurors have heard, and I think today are going to hear more testimony from Fidel Marquez. He was a senior vice president for ComEd who was confronted by the FBI in 2019 after he was captured on their recordings in relation to this scheme. And he then decided to cooperate in the case. Though he's pleaded guilty to bribery conspiracy in the case, but he won't face prison time if he testifies truthfully about everything. And I think what we saw yesterday was there were some secret recordings that he had made of one of the four defendants on trial. Apparently while they were eating lunch at Saputo's, a popular Springfield restaurant where Madigan and many of his allies often dined. So we're really starting to get a flavor of that. This obviously, I believe this is day 10 or 11 of the trial, and we've got several weeks to go, and more to come on this.
Yeah, well, exactly. And this is an issue we will continue to also follow on the show, especially the implication. Again, Madigan, I guess what he's usually said, he has been charged with wrongdoing. He is not personally on trial in this case, but his name
right.
is coming up a lot in this. So this is something we will continue to watch weeks and months ahead. Jeremy Gorner with the Chicago Tribune and Peter Hancock with Capital News Illinois. Thanks so much for being with us and sharing your reporting with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you, Brian.